Hello, this is Universal Soul Love.
This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love. Welcome to our show. Today we're really privileged and honored to have the great Michael Tillinger with us. Michael Tillinger is a world-renowned author, scientist, explorer, who has become an authority on the origins of mankind and on the vanished civilizations of southern Africa. Michael has founded the Ubuntu Party, which focuses on no money system and contributionism. Michael has written many books, including Slave Species of God, Adam's Calendar, The African Temples of the Anunnaki, and African Temples of the African Gods, and the book on Ubuntu, Contributionism, The Blueprint, The Human Prosperity.
Very excited to have you on our show today, Michael. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Lana and David. Good to be talking to you.
Absolutely. We just met you this past weekend. You came to Sydney to do a workshop, and we were privileged to have dinner with you and spend some time with you talking about metaphysics and a lot of philosophy and a lot of different things, and about Ubuntu, obviously, and global issues. And
of course, Michael, you're touring throughout the world with your ideas on how we can better human civilization. Tell us, how did it all start? I believe that your background is actually as a musician and painter, is that right?
Well, more a musician, really. I started life out as a young child that was dragged to classical concerts and opera because my mother was an opera singer. So I was very involved in the arts and music since an early age, theater. So, and having natural abilities in the musical area, being able to sing and play musical instruments and also compose music. So I always thought I was going to be a musician. I mean, it never crossed my mind that I'd be anything else.
Wow. And you actually did spend some time having your own pop and rock band?
Yes. No, in South Africa, I was involved in theatre and music from the age of 18.
Wow. Very.
And played, you know, we had a band called Sterling and Tillinger, which was very popular in South Africa. We had, I think, 3 songs on the charts, maybe 4. In South Africa, and we played to packed houses and packed audiences wherever we played. I always thought I was going to be a musician, and suddenly something changed. A lot of things happened. Yeah, we recorded an album in the USA in 1985, and we were just loved by all the major labels in Los Angeles after we recorded that in Nashville. Yeah. And then once we were made all kinds of offers, they were telling us we were going to be the next Simon and Garfunkel, the next Hall & Oates. And we were just confident because we knew that, you know, we played for a long time already to big crowds. And so we thought, oh, wow, this is it. This is our destiny. And then suddenly the big shock when they asked us, well, where are you from? And we said, South Africa. And silence, and suddenly, sorry, all deals off the table.
Oh, really?
We cannot sign you as white boys from South Africa. That was just a no-go because we were right in the heart, in the middle of the cultural boycott against South African musicians and artists, which is, in hindsight now, if you think about, there was one of the cruelest and most brutal way to ostracize a country and its cultural and its spiritual evolution, to shut down the arts and culture.
True.
And this is what the international community did to South African musicians and artists and actors. It was really, if in hindsight now, you can see the agenda of the elite is to stop the artistic growth of a country, which is its expansion of consciousness.
True, because the creative imagination, creativity is our power. And why not stifle creativity and really keep a society or a species down that way, and limit their thinking and their power.
So that was a big, you know, that was a big disappointment, and I took a while to get over that. And then I still carried on playing music. I went back to South Africa. I recorded a lot of anti-apartheid, anti-establishment music that got me into a lot of trouble, and my life was threatened. And so I was already, a rebel and a troublemaker and a bit of a revolutionary then. And little did I know how my life was going to change.
You're still a rebel, aren't you?
So, well, Michael, tell us, how did you come across those, to research and look at those ancient remnants of that civilization in South Africa? How did that happen?
What led you to?
Well, you know, you're talking about the ruins of Southern Africa, which are predominantly the stone circles of South Africa and Southern Africa, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Botswana. Those are not new. They've been, the fascination with those circles go back 500 years to the late 1400s. And the first Portuguese explorers that came around the Cape of Good Hope, the southern tip of Africa, on their way from Portugal to India. And they started finding these ancient ruins and structures and started writing about them, making records, recording them in their documents. And so the knowledge about that goes back a long, long way. But then the Eurocentric perception, the real exploration of the stone circles really started in the mid-1800s with a German and English British explorers. And the Great Zimbabwe exploration was a fascinating one, which is connected to all the stone circles in Southern Africa. And I only became aware of it in 2005, when I was writing Slave Species of God. I suddenly started reading all the papers that I found about all these ancient structures and what people thought they were, what archaeologists and historians thought they were, and how many there were.
You actually wrote Slave Species of God before you discovered these.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
Cool. What led you to? Okay, that's I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it was really at that time, and I just subconsciously took that in while I was writing Slave Species, and then just as I finished Slave Species, when I released it, within the first few months, I went to do a presentation in Pretoria, and one of the guys that came to my presentation was a guy called Johan Heiner, who had been photographing the stone circles from his aeroplane, because that was the business he was in, a light aircraft, doing forestry and so forth. And he was photographing those ruins for about 10 or 15 years at that stage already. And that just blew my mind when he showed me the aerial photographs of what he'd been photographing. And I instinctively knew that what I saw was connected to what I wrote about in Slave Species of God. And that led to me meeting with Johan in 2007 and then exploring the stone ruins and realizing, wow, this is a whole new chapter in this body of research and this body of knowledge. And I moved out of Johannesburg, moved into the little town of Waterfallbuerten, and set up the sort of base there for more research and set up my little museum and started doing more work and research into the stone circles, which led to the next few books and an explosion of information and, I guess, downloads from the morphogenetic fields of information and knowledge, because I was right in the heart of the dense clusters of the stone circles and all these tools and artifacts. And, it was a really rapid journey of discovery for me. It was also at that time that I started promoting the philosophy of a world without money. So all of this happened at the same time. So while I was researching ancient civilizations and the origins of humankind, I realized that mankind or humanity has lived without money for much longer than we've lived with money. So I started processing ideas and the concepts of what would it be like to live in a world without money? How would we survive? How would we buy things? Right? How would we get on? What would drive progress? And only to realize that, wait a minute, money is a thing that stifles everything and then stops progress. And the moment you remove money, it seems to take the lid off the pressure cooker and allows us the freedom of expression and discovery and exploration. And the rest is now history. And we are very active in research and the Ubuntu movement has become what it is around the world today, and including a political party.
That's really interesting that we actually did live without money. I didn't know that that most civilization was there without money rather than with money. It's if we could maybe
certainly going back to the very beginning of it all, and it's interesting because I had never. I mean, certainly a lot of people talk about money being the root of all evil, and but I think you've really taken it to where no one's ever gone before in terms of considering how could anyone ever operate. You know, we always assume that there has to be some medium of exchange, some kind of system of value, a transaction for transactions. Yeah. You know, we always default to bartering. And I love the idea of contributionism because I believe in, and this is, you know, essentially, this is one of your essential themes of Ubuntu, is that, and for me, it's so important that when you give without expectation, and you do just because. And there's no, I mean, being a private detective, I've just dealt with corruption and con artists and every kind of grand scheme you can possibly think of. And I've become cynical because of it, because I tend to look for people's motivations and hidden agendas, or at least I used to before I went through my own awakening and started to work through all of that. But that's been a difficult issue for me, is this human behavior. And so you've really addressed that, and you've taken it on like no one else, and I'm thankful for that.
Well, I guess, Michael, it sounds like your view is that it's not mankind itself that is tainted, but it's that money and the way money has been used to manipulate people.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, just to in case people are confused by this, if they're watching this, money is not a consequence of thousands of years of barter and trade. That's part of the lie that we've been told. Mm. And most of us are fed that as, oh, that's how money evolved. So that we are under the false impression that money has always been part of our evolutionary process, if you can call it that. And that is not true. This is why they fill us with those lies. There's very specific...
When did money start? When, in your research, can you tell us when...
currency.
When they started using money or currency?
Yeah. Well, that's really where I'm leading with this, is to show that there's a specific time in human history where money suddenly appears out of the blue, and it starts to being used and as a tool of enslavement. So that's what this is what we're dealing with here. Money is very much a tool of enslavement, just like whips and chains. Mm. It's a slavery system. In fact, those that work in some of the secret government projects and so forth refer to it as the Babylonian magic money slavery system. As in magic, as in black magic. It's almost as if money is like a tool of black magic to enchant and enslave humanity. And look what it does, makes us do.
The debt-based system is one of the grandest deceptions, one of the most cleverest schemes I have ever seen perpetrated on any species. It's the amazing.
So to just to add to that is that, you know, we don't need money to survive. And in fact, the moment we remove money from the system, we start to realize how much abundance we can create by simply cooperating and collaborating and not competing. Mm-hmm. So money and competition are run parallel in the sort of in the capitalist system that we are enslaved in. The moment you replace the competition with cooperation and collaboration, everything changes. Suddenly, we don't hide the cures for all disease. We don't hide scientific discoveries that give us free and alternative energy. We don't hide any discovery because that becomes what we do. That is what we do as the as humanity for ourselves and our communities, for the benefit of our communities, not for the benefit of corporations or governments so that they can enslave us with our own inventions and our own technology.
Good point.
So, Michael, how did you come to this? I had thought that the beginning of all this was when you became aware of the ruins in South Africa. But it looks like you were aware of this, and you're aware of the fact that mankind may have been genetically engineered even before that. How did you get to do that and write Slave Species of God?
Well, Slave Species of God is just really my attempt to shine a spotlight on our murky origins of humankind, the fact that we are not an evolved species, the fact we actually are genetically mutated species, genetically modified species, and a genetically cloned species, Any geneticist or molecular biologist that has looked at this will tell you our DNA is not an evolved DNA. It's a spliced DNA. It's a patchwork of different DNA strands. Yes. And this is what we are. We're a slave species of the past.
How did you get to realize?
I beg your pardon?
Were you working in the area of biology or?
Well, I studied pharmaceutics, so I spent 5 years at Wits University in Johannesburg at medical school, which is pharmaceutics is part of the medical school. Mm. So we study very much the same stuff as doctors study, and then at some stage there's a split.
What alerted you to it? Is it the fact that we have junk DNA?
Did you sort of ask, like me, I sort of asked myself questions, and you and I and Lana had this conversation over dinner. Why do we have pain? Why were we made with pain and pleasure? Why is it pleasurable to eat food? Why is sex pleasurable? Why do we need pain? Do we need pain? We need pain and suffering. Or were we made with that? Is that a control mechanism? I don't know. And these are just questions that people don't normally ask, you know, about us. And that's the mystic in me, I guess, or the investigator.
Yeah.
You ask these
questions. You know, David, what you're bringing up there are deeply philosophical and also spiritual questions. It's all connected. Remember, all fields of knowledge and information are connected. They're not compartmentalized into different divisions. Everything is connected. All knowledge, all knowledge sits out there in the morphogenetic field. We just tap into this information every now and then and download what we can before, you know, our connection shuts down. So our thoughts are not our thoughts. Our thoughts are just messages that we get from the morphogenetic field. Our brains are not storage devices for information. Our brains is just a tool to connect to the frequencies and the information field around us. So, given this information,
that's very true. This is the collective consciousness, and this is where I draw my information from. Oftentimes, you know, that inspired source that just sort of that you channel,
and I know people talk about the Akashic records as well.
Well, that's so, the Akashic records is what he's talking about. It's that morphogenic field where all that information is contained, and it's as within, so without. It's there. And it's accessible to all. Yeah. And part of the enslavement is that we're being blocked from that, and we don't understand that. That is the matrix.
So perhaps we can, perhaps you can explain to our listeners a little bit about the slave species and the actual origins of man.
Yeah, well, it's very clearly told to us by all ancient cultures. Every ancient civilization tells us that we come from the stars, and some of them are very specific as to what star system we come from. The original people of Australia tell us they come from the Pleiades. The various people from Africa tell you that some of them are connected to the Pleiades. Some talk about Sirius, and so forth. So all ancient cultures tell us we come from the stars, that our ancestors come from the stars. And many of these cultures tell us that we were created by those that came from the stars as a species, and specifically created as a slave species for those beings that came from the stars, that call themselves gods or impose themselves as gods, creators of this new species. And we then, as a new species, looked up at these beings as our creators and our God. And that's where a lot of the confusion comes in between the God with a big G, as I call it, and the gods with a small g. Exactly. The creator of all things, the source of all things in the universe, that unified primordial field of consciousness, that unity consciousness, that prime resonance frequency that is responsible for all things in creation, that coexists in harmonic coherence everywhere. And then these beings that then go around various planets and star systems and galaxies and universes and just run amok and create havoc by creating and cloning new species and enslaving them for their own pleasure or their own exploitational reasons.
And this is not a far-fetched theory, and I'll tell you why. Because we as human beings enslave a lot of animal species on this planet, like cows, pigs, and sheep. And it's possible we don't think of them as intelligent beings the way we think of ourselves as intelligent beings with our advanced technology. And it's possible to some animals, maybe they look at us and say, they're gods, look at what they've created. I don't think they do. But, you know, that that could be what you're talking about. Maybe the aliens, we looked at them and said, look, they can fly spaceships and they can do amazing things. They must be gods. And
we, well, David, it's important to realize that this information has been handed down over thousands of years by the knowledge keepers of traditional knowledge and ancient knowledge of the ancient civilizations. And oral tradition is a critical component of our knowledge pool. You know, oral tradition cannot be destroyed. And this is why oral tradition, when it's handed down from custodian to custodian, generation to generation, is handed down with reverence. It's a serious event. It's a serious transfer of information that is handed down. And people are initiated into shamanism or a certain sect of that civilization or that culture to take that knowledge on. And be able to transfer that information as accurately as possible, and this is really important. Written information can be destroyed, manipulated; it can be burnt, hidden. But oral tradition stays with people and it gets passed down as long as it's transferred correctly. And this is, if you look at the way that some ancient civilizations, like the Vedic oral tradition, how that is transferred today. I mean, it's a lifetime of study to transfer that information, where people sit and learn the chants so that it's rhythmically accurate and rhythmically correct, and the words and the pronunciation is exactly according to the original way that it was supposed to have been created or written or shared. So this is really, and unfortunately, the Eurocentric way of thinking is always, let's go in and conquer the tribes, the native tribes. Let's destroy their knowledge and information by removing them from their ancestors, severing the people from their ancestors, and that way you sever them from their knowledge and the ancient information, and then replacing their knowledge and information with Eurocentric books, and in most specifically the Bible. And this is how you create a species with amnesia, that then starts to wonder who we are, where we come from, why we're here.
Hypnotic amnesia means we accept it without question. It's a very strange thing when you think about it. We're born into the world. We don't know where we came from. And people disappear. We don't know where they go. Why is this? It's illogical.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it's not far-fetched. First of all, it's not far-fetched. Let me finish that train of thought. It's not far-fetched to think that we are actually being farmed, the human beings are being farmed the way that we farm animals. If you think about how many people mysteriously disappear every year, close to 1 million children go missing every year. Another, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of people disappear mysteriously, never to be found.
I do know.
And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of food. That's a disgusting thought. But hey, we breed animals to kill them and to cut the meat off their bones, and then we serve them in restaurants. If you think about it, it could actually make you sick.
Hold on, Michael. Are you suggesting that there's cannibalism which is practiced, or
cattle mutilations?
Not just cannibalism, but actually just people are being eaten like we eat animals by
others.
They're not necessarily worried about us as conscious beings. But I brought that up because it's important to look at the ancient cultures and what they write about in their ancient texts. And the Sumerian texts clearly tell us that the gods created humanity as their slaves. Okay. The Sumerian texts talk about the Anuna gods, the Anunnaki, and this is a huge subject, as you know. This is not something that you can just brush over very quickly. These are powerful, powerful beings that have been around the universe for millions and millions, probably billions of years, that have conquered the universe and the multiverses. They are multidimensional beings. They've got advanced knowledge. They're incredibly powerful. They can do all kinds of stuff that we can only imagine. And they seem to be responsible for genetically creating us as a species.
Our scientists actually do the same thing. We create species. We genetically alter animals. We create new life forms. So it's not far-fetched that we couldn't be the same. And quite frankly, I mean, I through my own channelings, I have access to some of that knowledge. And these beings really do think of human beings as having, as their lives having no value. Sometimes the way we think of, some people think of cockroaches or a lot of species, that they have no value and they're just here for, we're here for their entertainment and for their use. That's all.
Yep.
There's no love there. There's simply, you're just a human resource. That's all. And they, a lot of them think of us as just pathetic sheep, really.
The problem with this, David, is that, you know, this is what I call the terrible truth. Mm-hmm. And some people are very uncomfortable about discussing this and talking about it. And I can understand, because it goes down into the deepest realization who we are, and realizing that we were created as slaves, that we are bred as slaves, that we are controlled. The whole planet is actually a slave colony. This is a deep shaking of our fundamental belief of yeah. being free and having free will and all that, which is very far removed from what's really going on.
We're imprisoned.
What I'd like to suggest to people watching this is go away and watch The Island, the movie The Island. Mm-hmm. Watch that, and you'll realize what's going on planet Earth. Just a bigger version of that.
So just to talk about the ancient origins of slave species, I'm just wondering whether you could tell us a little bit more about your findings, these ruins. I understand that the thoughts were, or the theories are, that these ruins are structures that create sound, and that I believe the sound was used to transport mine and transport gold for the Anunnaki. And that the humans were possibly genetically created to serve that purpose? Is that?
Yeah, that's exactly what the research shows, that humans were genetically created as the slave species to work in the gold mines as cheap labor. And it's, you know, the question is, well, if they're so smart, why don't they just make machines? Well, machines, you need to fix machines. They break. You need to replace them and make new ones. And humans breed themselves. And if they die, you just breed more. And if, you know, they're dispensable, you don't have to keep fixing them. They just breed and breed, and you use them as slaves, and then they die, or you kill them, or whatever. So it's really that simple. It's not rocket science. Machines can't do things that humans do. Yeah. You know, this is a machine. Humans can pick things up and carry it and do this and do that, and they work 24 hours a day. And the key thing here is that humans are filled with the concept of understanding threats and fear. You can threaten somebody that if they don't do this, that the consequences are X, Y, and Z, which may be painful to you or very uncomfortable for you. So people then become fearful and then carry on doing what it is they've been instructed to do.
Fear is a huge motivator for darkness.
Yeah.
So I understand that the Anunnaki originated from or live on the planet Nibiru, and that the atmosphere there was becoming degraded, and gold was needed to fix the atmosphere. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what was believed for a long time, and I believe that that's not really true. I think it's a misinterpretation of what we were really told. Yeah. Is that the gold, first of all, it's not the gold in the yellow metallic form. It's the monoatomic form of gold, which is often referred to as the white powder of gold. Okay. It's a white fluffy powder that has got no metallic properties at all. And you know, this is a big surprise to geologists, because they think they know everything, and chemistry students, because they think they get taught everything at university. Well, you know, welcome to the real world. What you get taught at university is actually the lie and the deception, you know, from medical school. You don't get taught how to heal and how to cure disease. You get taught how to treat disease and how to sustain people and how to prescribe medicine and how to detect what is possibly wrong with the person, and how to then prescribe medication to them that is provided by the pharmaceutical industry. So that is what's available. You're not taught how to cure or heal people. And that's the problem. So we come out of university thinking, oh, we got the highest level of knowledge and information, but it's actually, that's the deception. This is what I tell people all the time is that remember who funds the universities and who funds the research facilities and who funds the textbooks that are filled with the information from the research. It's the banking families whose objective is to create a future obedient labor force. Mm-hmm. And this brings us back to the money and the control of the world and the people through money.
Can I just add that the biggest deception and the biggest manipulation of all is information and knowledge. And
yes,
and it's always been, and I can tell you this again from my own psychic downloads or whatever, that it's all been a manipulation. Everything we give meaning and labels to and everything that we believe is true is almost a manipulation, the societal lies. We talked about how deep this runs, and I can tell you that religion and philosophy and everything you know, the biggest threat to any established order is to start asking questions. And any dictator knows he needs to keep his, I don't mean to say he, but traditionally anyhow,
is to
keep the people ignorant or to teach them what you want them to know. And that's it.
That's what it is.
The priests have always been in power, and now it's the lawyers who are in power, and I'm not picking on anyone in particular. I've worked for lawyers for 20 years, you know, as a private detective. We've contributed to the dysfunction of society.
It looks like the Anunnaki did make a bit of a mistake, a bit of a blunder to make humans reasonably intelligent. Because we do question things, you know, humans.
Well, that's really, Lana, that's a consequence of our evolution of consciousness and our genetic evolution.
So you don't think not necessarily we're physically. Do you think that at one stage most humans were mindless robotic creatures?
Oh, we certainly were. And in the early days, we were. We were very much a slave species that was very, 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 very dumb, very immature, completely unconscious, and we've evolved out of that consciously. Okay. Not necessarily physically, but evolved out of that consciously. But this is a huge subject. I mean, this goes to...
How many hours do we have? But I believe that the genetics, that it's being thought that the genetics may have been obtained from apes, the higher... I know that with chimpanzees, we share about 98% of our genes, and that possibly there was a bit of Anunnaki genes spliced into us later on. But when you look at apes and chimps, they are incredibly curious. So, but you're saying the initial model of mankind was very different to that.
It's very difficult to say where the original DNA actually came from. It's what is unfolding very quickly, and many people have been aware of it this for a long time already, is that the different race groups on this planet have actually been seeded from different star groups and different beings. You know, the Oriental people, Chinese people come from a gene pool that looks like Chinese people.
Right.
And the star system that would have those kind of people. Caucasians, the white blondes, the Norwegians, the guys from Scandinavia are from a gene pool from a star system that look like that. And so it goes. The Aboriginal people come from a star system, or the original people of Australia come from the Pleiades, from a group of people that look like they would look. So, and suddenly we get thrown together on this planet as different groups with the same source code, but different progenitors, different original genetics. So we all have the human source code from a species that was already on this planet, but then the external features of different starseed progenitors, and this causes a huge confusion.
Right. I must admit, when I first learned this, I was quite disappointed, because it sort of makes sense, because but it also perhaps it might explain racism. But it also reduces perhaps that sense of unity between all the races.
It's interesting.
Well, you know, the thing is that you're going to find different species. The universe is teeming with an infinite number of species.
For sure.
And we have a tiny little example that on this planet. The variety of different race groups, different species, different race groups.
Not all the same species, though, presumably, if you use the definition of species as, creatures that can reproduce and produce offspring.
Well, we're beings and conscious beings. Some beings have got a high level of consciousness. The definition of that is really difficult. I don't even want to get into that because that could really trip you up, and regret saying what you said.
we should talk about Ubuntu.
Yes,
I just wanted to mention, you mentioned star seeds, and this was the first time it really clicked in, because we have a good friend that we introduced you to named Jonah Bolt of the Starseed Society and Starseed Radio. And I finally got what that means by starseed. And he often calls me star bro, star brother. And typically I talk about soul family and soul.
Yeah.
So this is, I understand this now. And
what seems to happen here, David and Lana, is that planets and galaxies and beings on a planet, this is all a consequence of seeding. Advanced beings from other planets, which are part of the great creation, go and they settle on a planet. They terraform. They create an atmosphere. They play with it. They manifest the reality.
Yeah.
It's like a game. It is a playground of manifestation of creation. The way we build buildings and create cities and creches for children, and the way we clone species on our planet, mm-hmm. and crossbreed dogs and all that.
They go and
seed a planet, mm-hmm. and put the plant life and the vegetation and the animals and the bugs and the insects and everything there and see how it grows and what happens. And
that would suggest that there's not one God, but many gods.
There are no gods. We are God. We are co-creators of the universe, I would say. And this is the human experiment. That's what I would say. But anyhow.
We are all fractals of the primary source code,
right.
The prime resonance frequency, the prime divine creator, and we only exist by resonating with the source creation. The moment you go into dissonance, you start to get sick, because you're in dis-ease, you're no longer in coherence, you're in dissonance with the source code. And this is why, if we don't understand who we are and where we come from, in a way makes us dissonant, because we don't resonate with our origins.
Yeah,
and this is why we tend to be a sick species. Sick, the human race is sick, because we've been manipulated and dumbed down and severed from our connection to source, to our creator, and we're coming out of that. This is the great awakening. Remember, the good
news. Tell us a bit more about the source code. Are you talking about God or
the collective consciousness, maybe?
Yeah, you know, the thing is that when you say God, it's very dangerous, because the moment you use that word God,
yeah.
people have preconceived ideas of what they read in the Bible or in the Quran or
what do you mean by the source code?
Well, the creative source of all things. The source of all things comes from some sort of a primordial infinite consciousness of resonance that brings everything into creation. Yeah. You can call it God.
Universal source, divine spirit, etc., etc.
Okay.
The cosmic mind.
I'm wondering whether you can comment on the fact that, you know, with the so many people now feeling that there's a shift happening, both good things and bad things. Our world seems to be going quite mad with all the things that are climatic change, with the possibility of the economy, with all sorts of possibilities of war at the moment, with Russia and China and America posturing, but also so many spiritual people are talking about an evolution, and I know that many people consider that we might be evolving from 3D to 5D, and that the so-called junk DNA, the parts of our DNA that scientists do not understand what they might code for, might in fact be coming alive from changes around us.
Absolutely, our DNA is evolving. There's no that's undeniable.
What is the evidence for that?
Oh, there's a lot of evidence for that. When you start going into the research, what's interesting is that there are children being born with three strands of DNA now, not just two strands of DNA. Oh. It's just like, what's going on, you know?
This is not reported in mainstream scientific media, obviously.
Of course not, but this is why you have to go looking for it, because remember, everything we're taught and everything we're told in mainstream media is the programming. Mm-hmm. It's the control mechanism. So you've got to get out of that and go look for this research in alternative circles. And often when you do that, it's called conspiracy theories, and it's not true. And this is why it's so beautifully set up. You see, if it's not on the mainstream media, which is controlled by the global elite, then it's conspiracy, and it's to undermine the well-being of the planet and undermine the well-being of the state and the country and so forth. It's just such a wonderfully structured deception. You've got to compliment them on the deception that they've put into place. But the game is up. It's all over now.
Well, you know, people are awakening. There's a great awakening happening, and so yeah.
So the thing is that, like I said earlier, this information is just too terrible for most people to comprehend. Unfortunately, so. I know
that when I was reading and studying, I came across you and your books, and I was reading the website initially, and coming across the idea of us being genetically engineered, which I had not heard of before. I remember being gobsmacked, and the next day I was walking around in a bit of a haze thinking, my God, I've been genetically engineered. It sort of like takes a little while to actually sink in.
Try going through a traumatic awakening and wake up this. Actually seeing truth, you know, it's traumatic.
That's why I call it the terrible truth, and sooner or later we have to face the truth. But from that facing comes a healing as well. Mm. We start to realize, you know, a good psychologist or a psychiatrist like you've got to face your trauma, you've got to face the reality to come to terms with it so that you can move on.
So how do you do that, Michael? How would you suggest that people face the truth and their trauma and heal and move on?
Well, it happens differently for every single one of us. There are as many trigger points as there are people. Everyone has their own trigger point. Something happens in your life or with your partner or in your business or in your school or wherever, or while you're sleeping, and something, or you're watching a movie, or you might stub your toe while you're walking on the sidewalk, and you know, you reach down for your toe and you feel your toe throbbing, and you suddenly go, why is my toe throbbing? And it's throbbing the same pulse as my heart is throbbing, and you make a connection. You go, hold on, there's a resonance here, and it suddenly that kickstarts a feedback mechanism through your brain that activates your DNA, because now suddenly you're starting to think about, you know, higher thoughts that you never thought of before, and that's the trigger mechanism. So I'm just using a weird and wild example, right?
It does happen that way. Yeah.
Everyone has their own trigger point. Mm. From the wealthiest people, and I've dealt with the wealthiest people, to the lowest of the social structure that we would call it today, the poorest people in the ghetto. So I've seen the poorest people have the awakening moment, and the wealthiest people have an awakening moment, and it is a beautiful thing to see. And this is really what we should be talking about, is when people wake up and they see the manipulation, they realize that we've been controlled and we've been lied to, and they realize that it is up to them to change, up to them to do something about it. And that is a beautiful thing to observe.
It is. It's like Gandhi said, be the change that you wish to see in the world, in his own words. And it's true. We each individually have to take responsibility for what we create in our lives. And
Well, that brings me actually to a question, Mark, about responsibility. Because from what you're saying, you're saying that mankind's been manipulated and that we have been poorly treated. However, humanity has got flaws as well, I'm assuming, and I'm wondering whether how involved are we in this? I mean, we kill animals as well.
We don't know all our choices either. I don't mean to jump in and talk about power of choice, but just...
Well, I guess my question is, have we been manipulated? Are we the victims? Or how responsible are we for our role?
Good question. We are going through this process, waking up, realizing that our world and our planet is not what we thought. And that then makes us look at our own actions as to exactly what you said. What are we doing to the other beings on the planet? Our animals, the pets that we keep, the animals we domesticate, how we treat them, how we slaughter them and eat them, and how we look at grass and trees and things around us. And, you know, many people that are vegetarians, you know, say, well, I don't eat animals. And by saying that, they're suggesting that, you know, the foods that we eat off the trees don't have consciousness.
No.
And that becomes a whole another philosophical issue. You know, everything is consciousness. Everything is imbued. Everything in existence is imbued with the energy and the resonance of the source consciousness field.
That's right, the vital essence.
Whether it breathes or not, or whether it can talk or not.
Yes. Everything has consciousness. That was the concept of my first book, and the first download I had was about the philosophy of panpsychism, that all things have consciousness, even inanimate objects have consciousness or awareness. And I'm not talking about intelligence
rock,
or feeling.
Stones, the rock around us has consciousness. And we don't think of it like that.
Well,
everything existence is
to wake up to that and respect that.
This is oneness. This is oneness consciousness, and this is an essential concept that we need to learn, and that we would learn. And it breaks our limited thinking, and it breaks our self-defeating patterns. It actually does, and this will improve our condition.
So, and this is why it's important to understand this thing that I call the source code or the source creation, and the creator is that that's the prime resonance frequency, and everything in creation that we observe around us, the visible and the invisible, the many frequencies of light that we can't see, the many frequencies of sound that we cannot hear, it's all resonance and vibration and frequency. And once we understand that, and we realize what sound and resonance does, that God said, let there be light, is actually telling us that everything in creation comes from that primary source resonance field of the creator. The sound that then gives rise to light that combine, and the sound and the light combine to activate the infinite quantum soup of possibility and manifest infinite creation. So we have that encoded in our DNA. How can I say that? It's because we can manifest DNA with sound. Mm-hmm. And this has been done in 2011 by Luc Montagnier, who created DNA in a lab with sound resonance. Now, if you can generate DNA with sound frequencies, think about what DNA contains. All the information and the codes in our entire body, how it works. If you can manifest DNA with sound, that means we can start to understand sound as a primary source resonance code for everything in creation, and that everything has its own prime resonance frequency, from rocks to plants to bugs to insects, every cell in our body, everything in creation. This is how we can treat all disease with prime resonance frequency of that specific organism. Cancer cells can be destroyed with a prime resonance frequency of those cancer cells. Any disease can be cured. Any limbs can be regrown. Any organs can be regrown. Once we embrace the prime resonance frequency and the concept of resonance, this is the beauty of coming into higher consciousness, starting to understand, becoming more enlightened, and embracing this pool of knowledge and discarding the lies and deceptions, especially those that we've been taught at medical school.
You know, this is essential metaphysics, and of course metaphysics has a negative connotation to it, or it used to. But the Rosicrucians have taught this for thousands of years, and they were persecuted, and that's why they were not, at least the Rosicrucians that I know, were not the Illuminati. That was another piece of disinformation. They were persecuted. And again, you know, there's good and bad in every group anyhow, if you want to look at it that way. But
you know, this is interesting. It puts in a new context, perhaps, some of the
secret societies.
Some of the Buddhist chants, like Om and the power of chanting and all of that.
In Kabbalah.
Absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Yeah,
these are the underpinnings of all philosophies and religions.
So it gives a lot of hope to humanity, a lot of hope for our evolution and our technology. So we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left, I know that your focus at the moment is on Ubuntu.
Give a little time to that. Unfortunately, we got involved in this fascinating conversation.
But maybe you could just summarize where you'd like to go with Ubuntu, and and
what you're doing now.
The future lies.
Yeah, well, right now we are heading into the 2016 local municipal elections in South Africa. Ubuntu has a global following of people all over the world. That doesn't mean we are wealthy or rich. We get some donations. We need to now go into, and my focus is on fundraising for the local elections next year. We're raising $200,000 so we can make it a successful election. Our aim is the 12 smallest towns in South Africa, 12 smallest municipalities, should I say, because we know that we can reach all the people in those municipalities and share with them the Ubuntu philosophy, laying the platform of free electricity, and through the free electricity, creating the community projects that then allow the people to contribute 3 hours a week to one of those community projects, in return getting everything that we create for free. Wow. Because electricity is ours, and start creating abundance by collectively working in collaboration, turning our town into a powerful labor force that then can underprice any Walmart or any other manufacturer, and bringing in large sums of money into our town through all the community projects while we are still stuck in the monetary system, and eventually turning it into an abundance where that becomes a sharing a tool between communities that take on the same philosophy. We want to win at least one of these municipalities in 2016 elections, and that will allow us as the political party that then runs those towns to implement this philosophy. Yeah. And that means that nobody will stand in our way. We don't have to ask permission because we've been voted in on these promises. Yeah. So we're then delivering on the promises of the people. This is such a simple plan. It is the Achilles heel approach to the current global slavery system controlled by the global elite and the bankers. And very quickly, we remove ourselves from the use of money and the abuse of the people by those that control the supply of money, the banking families. And it is such a simple and eloquent system that once people start thinking this through, they go, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually not only possible, but it's already happening. Okay. So my call to the people that watch this is go online, go onto Ubuntu Party website, ubuntuparty.org.za. Help us find the funding so that we can make this a reality in South Africa. Let us be the spearhead for the rest of the world, the rest of the countries, to pierce the veil of this global control. And let that success, that little town somewhere in South Africa, be the success and the example that then resonates like a lightning bolt throughout the world, not just in South Africa. It'll jump across the Atlantic, across the Indian, across the Pacific, where other countries will take a leadership role from us. They'll be inspired, and they'll see that it's possible, and that very quickly. This will happen in thousands of towns around the world, not just in South Africa.
Michael, I think you were saying that the reason why it would spread so quickly is that when people see that they can have free energy, and when people see that they only have to work for 3 hours, if
yes.
they're together, then basically their lifestyle is just so different. So when one township is able to function like that, everyone else will want that as well.
Sure.
Yes.
We took your workshop and we saw how this works, and I was impressed. And you're very well known in our network and with our groups. Many people follow Ubuntu, and you're associated with many of the organizations that we work with. We call it the New Earth Movement. Sasha Stone with the New Earth Project has been on our show, and Alexandra Midas of a Galactic Connection, who's very well known in these circles. So this is a very large movement, and it's very well accepted, and it's going to continue to expand. I know that, and I have faith in what you're doing and in your principles and in your work, and just thank you very much for everything that you're doing.
It's brilliant. I have read your book on contributionism and Ubuntu, and I think if anyone wants to sort of, they can actually download that, can't they? So
So that's actually one of our funding mechanisms. You know, if you want to help us, well, go onto our website, go onto donate, the donate page. You can make a donation, or you can download the book for $10, and that is a donation as well. So
right. Wonderful. Look, thank you so much from, humanity for coming up with such a wonderful system. And
great solution. Yeah,
really very inspiring for the future. So thank you. Thank you for being on.
All the best. Thank you, Lana and David. thanks for talking to me, and no doubt we'll chat very soon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, and that's goodbye from us at Universal Solar.
We'll see you next time. Bye. Thank you very much, Michael Pellinger.
Bye.